For 7/12/2012, where in Carmen San Diego is Video Games Hot Dog? I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And we're coming at you from the Video Games Hot Dog satellite office in this
outer
apartment.
Space.
Outer space.
Because that's where satellites are.
Hamburg.
They're in outer space. I guess they're not always, like, they can be constructed on the ground.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But I see you were making a joke about how satellites were. Okay.
Yes. Kind of like a satellite of love.
We're coming to you from our satellite office on the moon. It's pretty cool. It's a lot of
craters,
gravity, dust. A lot of craters. Yeah, I was watching. I watched rocks. A video about the moon.
Yeah,
yeah. It was a short video, but it was just there's some super high res imagography that happened recently.
Okay.
Somebody made a. I kind of want one of these. They've published a. I don't know. It's like space man
balls.
Spaceman's ink. Has made a really a newer, more detailed globe.
Oh yeah,
of the
I
moon.
Saw about that.
Oh, of the moon.
Cool.
Yeah.
How do they do the backside
satellite? It's dark.
Okay.
You just have to shine a light. That you also have to buy their globe of the sun.
Oh.
Actual size.
Hmm. Does it when you turn around to the back? Does Pink Floyd play?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ah, thanks. Car alarms. Probably nobody can hear that.
Yeah, it's hard.
Anyway,
hard to know.
We're here in San Diego for the Comic-Con. How's the Comic-Con going? I fled. I got fed up after the first minute, and I was just like, you know what? I'm not going back there anymore.
You don't have to.
I know.
It's been okay.
Working the booth. Been working it.
Selling
it to the people.
It's every year. I feel like we get more and more walled in. I don't remember there being a full wall next to us from the from our neighboring booth. And it just blocks us off from the aisle almost entirely.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
And then the way that our booth is designed, there's only like a 1 foot space for people to look into and
to interact.
Yeah. But that's okay. The appeal of our booth is the shit that's out in front of it.
Sure. You know, the number of people who see it and are like fascinated and interested is interesting to me because I would assume that everyone has seen the game at this point, and a ton of people that have been like, oh yeah, I played that, you know, 4 or 8 years ago or whatever.
I played that when I was in middle school, says the 80-year-old man.
There were a lot of adults that were like, oh yeah, I played that in high school. I played that in middle school.
Hmm.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
All right. So yeah, we released the beta of our new game to the larger Kickstarter audience. That's going pretty well. People telling us about things.
Yep.
Is that somebody coming into here or somebody going into the neighbor's apartment?
I have no idea. We'll find out soon enough.
Yes, we will. That's the problem, being here with a whole bunch of dudes. You never get any privacy.
That's true.
We like to record very masturbatory episodes of Video Games Hot Dog, so it's an issue for us. What else? You guys seen anything cool at the Comic-Con?
I haven't had an opportunity to go over to Nintendo's Secret Hilton Ballroom yet.
But, like, there's a Secret Hilton somewhere?
I don't remember.
It's
Marriott. The Marriott Ballroom is where they have stashed all the...
Oh.
The Marriott Poppins.
Yeah.
Memorial Ballroom.
Stashed all their Game Boy stuff.
I have not had a chance to like go anywhere in Comic-Con at all yet.
I looked around. There weren't a lot of video games that I was particularly interested in playing. I played about 15 minutes of the new Castlevania game for the 3DS.
Oh, how is that?
It's through 3D.
Sure is.
There's, you know, I played it for 15 minutes and saw 2 enemy models.
Oh. Yeah. Wow. Weird.
Maybe, I guess, 3 or maybe 4. I don't know. There were some bats. And then there was like, you got a boomerang. Throw it with this button. And then I threw it a bunch, and then maybe it got stuck in something. Maybe it was consuming some sort of resources that I couldn't tell.
Is it full-on 3D or like 2.5D?
Yeah, it's 2.5D, but it's displayed in full-on 3D. And there's some jumping and some swinging on whip-style stuff, which, I mean, it seemed fun. I'll probably buy it, but I'll... It was also extremely uncomfortable. So there were 2 options. You could either look at it on a giant, super blurry ass screen up above you.
Giant screen also in 3D?
No. Well, maybe it was, and that's why it was so blurry.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was supposed to have some goggles. Or you could look at it on the 3DS, but the 3DS was like at a really uncomfortable level and chained down. Also, it was bent really awkwardly, and you couldn't move the screen.
I find myself
constantly adjusting the hinge of a DS as I play it and move it around to different more comfortable positions and stuff. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's whip dudes. There were skeletons and a big guy that you whip and some stuff falls out of him.
I wish people would realize that 3D art is not inherently better than good old 2D pixel art.
So this is something that I don't understand exactly. Like, you will simultaneously say, I couldn't play that game because the art was so bad, and also, like, this game, which has, you know, quote-unquote good art or whatever, is unplayable, right? Like, what does it mean for something to, like, have old sort of more, like, polygonal art or whatever, and for that to be bad and for difficult to play? Like I just have never, I don't think I have ever played a game where the art was so bad that I couldn't enjoy a game if the systems were interesting, right? Like, for me, I can just overlook. I don't think the art has ever been so distracting to me that I like wouldn't play a game.
Well, the one that I have the most problem with in that regard was Final Fantasy VII, and that was
because you mentioned that one.
Yeah,
recently.
That was one of the first, I think, 3D polygon games, or at least RPG.
It was in the first generation. I mean, yeah, you know, there was iRobot.
Yeah.
And StunRunner.
But yeah, it was just everything was so blocky and weird looking that it didn't even really look like people anymore.
I thought it was ugly at the time.
Okay.
You know, and I thought Ocarina of Time was kind of ugly at the time. It's just that systems were so good in that game as a product of its time that I really liked them. And I think now it might just be, I don't know why I couldn't get into it when I went back. I mean, a lot of it was just like
pixel art. Okay. Right. Like, pixel art is like a very distinct style, but it's also not particularly,
it's very deliberate.
With
pixel art, the person who's making the art for the game is choosing every single thing. So I don't feel this way about the pixel art in, say, Super Mario RPG, right? Where I was like, man, this looks like fucking garbage. I forgot the extent to which the environments in this game looked like garbage because they were digitized photos. Which,
okay.
So to me, pixel art is literally every aspect of everything that you see on the screen looks like somebody took care to make it look like this, right?
Good design.
And with 3D, it's like you can make a texture, but then it's like, if you really look at it, if you take a screenshot of something, it's like, oh, look at this enemy that I'm fighting, and it is just it's like a dirt clod. Huh. You know, it is only like, and I mean, it's not fair to say that looking at a still image of something that's moving around is, you know, oh, that's ugly when it's still, but like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, part of it is just being like a curmudgeon.
I mean, maybe you guys pay more attention to the aesthetics of stuff than I do. I'm just confused as to like how a game that is otherwise good but has a bad skin on it could really impact your desire to play it.
I mean, to me, it's almost more of a functional thing, like not being able to tell.
Okay, I mean, if every enemy looked exactly, like literally identically the same, that would be a problem.
I mean, not like, and also, I mean, I feel like it. Sprites are cheap, right? Mm-hmm. Compared to a 3D model. And so, in the first 15 minutes of a Castlevania game that was 2D art on the DS, I would have encountered 100 different enemy models instead of two.
But I think you probably would have encountered 6 or 8 instead of two, right?
No,
like,
I'll bet that if you took Portrait of Ruin and you just went through and killed stuff as you were going through, I bet you see 50. I'll bet you see 50 different monsters in the first 10 minutes of play.
I would have to look at it again, but I don't think that's true at all. Because I feel like they want you to, through repeat exposure, be able to like figure out how enemies move. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's...
Well, I mean, I think they go a little overboard in those games on providing a lot more variety and a little less consistency. I mean, they... you know, I mean, they're fairly good about, like, if there's something that has a weird attack pattern, you get to watch him for a little while before you have to deal with him, right? Like, maybe he's on the second floor, and, you know, and then when you go under him and he stabs you with his big spear, he's like, you're like, fuck, I guess he can do that.
Yeah,
that's okay. Yeah, I don't know. I was always a big What's the opposite of a proponent? It's an opponent.
Opponent. Yeah. Congress.
Conponent.
A cornponist. Oh, that's a good name. The cornponist.
Attitudist.
Yeah. He's a massa master. Yeah. I didn't like the sort of early days of 3D because I just felt like everything looked like shit. And I think you look at a PS1 game and it by and large looks like shit.
So like the art styles that I have come to like the least are the ones on like the, you know, like Lord of the Rings. I remember like being way, way less happy with how that looked than World of Warcraft, even though
Lord of the Rings Online.
Like Lord of the Rings Online, yeah. Sorry. Because the polygon count was much higher and like they had paid a lot more attention to textures and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it was just like a fucking boring ass tree.
Yes.
Right? It wasn't like a super sweet fantasy tree. It was just like, oh, cool, a tree.
Yep.
Like this is exactly like a tree.
And they spend a lot of time trying to make people look natural and they just never quite make it. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand.
And I didn't play it myself, but I'm guessing a lot of the zones looked very similar because they went for realistic looking color choices and textures and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see, like, well, the late game stuff gets pretty crazy, I guess, but I didn't see much beyond, like, the Shire, right? Because I was delivering a bunch of mail and pies. So.
And the real world is not an interesting fantasy environment.
I mean, there are parts of the real
places,
world.
Right? I mean, and I feel like the way that World of Warcraft was designed aesthetically is, I mean, because every once in a while, I remember getting a National Geographic and reading about this one particular range of mountains, and I was like, oh, this is totally what they were looking at when they designed Blade's Edge, because I didn't realize that there was a place where the earth is just these giant, razor-sharp, rocky spires. And there's, like, one place like that, you know? But that's the thing. I mean, it's not right next to a beautiful rainforest, which is also right next to a volcano that's constantly erupting. Right? I mean, that's not. Yeah,
all on a continent that's 10 or 15 miles across.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah,
you know.
I guess the fundamental thing is like. Art is important and it like brings you into the game or whatever, but it is so secondary to what's going on for me that I can forgive a lot, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of other people complaining about it.
Well, for an RPG like a Final Fantasy game though, the narrative is such a huge portion of what it is that if you can't really get into that and get into the characters and the world because the art pushes you away, then you haven't got a lot left.
Okay. Huh. Well, all right then.
I should probably still play Ocarina of Time again. I just found myself put up, like, getting into that second dungeon where it's just all the fire stuff, and it's like, ah, oh, God, this is just so ugly. Like, these environments are so ugly. And trying to play 3D games on the fucking DS or the 3DS, it's just like, God damn it. Like, this is just not good enough for this. And
I tried to play some of the demo for the new Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance and was just, handheld does not seem like the right format for a third-person running around game. Especially like
this one's supposed to be a sweeping epic style thing.
It
just doesn't work.
On the other hand, where
right.
And I feel like that's
stylus as a broom.
That's why the Vita has been doing so poorly, because that's the huge focus seems to be on games like that, like another Uncharted game. And I don't want to play Uncharted with those controls on that tiny screen.
Huh? As opposed to something like a Lumines or something that lends itself really well to that form factor.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, which I feel like was the only game that I ever really liked on the PSP. Oh, except for Symphony of the Night, you know, which is probably the most time I spent with my PSP was playing that. I guess I played a bunch of that Crisis Core or whatever, but it was just one of the Final Fantasy. It was like a sort of action-y, you know, just it was one of the, there was the AC, BC, CC, DC.
Right,
like
okay.
The bunch of Final Fantasy VII Gaiden, but yeah, I mean, it had that problem, right? It had that problem where it's like, all right, well, we've spent all the time making these meshes and texturing them and animating them, and oh, sorry, it still looks like ass because it's on this tiny screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, But like, so I don't, you know, the Lord of the Rings Online argument, I feel like Skyrim is pretty boring aesthetically.
It's just interesting enough.
Yeah.
And same, I mean, Fallout 3, I think if it hadn't had noticeable, like, or recognizable landmarks in it, and if it wasn't, mm-hmm. like, if it wasn't really well put together, it is also just very drab.
Yeah.
I feel what made Skyrim interesting enough to me, I feel like if it had not been like very Nordic and Vikings, and that was different enough that it was interesting, or if it had just been a straight fantasy world, it would have been dull.
I found Oblivion to be just boring as shit environmentally. Yeah. And I think I kind of just didn't exactly have the right approach to it, and I'd kind of like to go back and play it now that Fallout 3 sort of taught me how to play a Bethesda game. I might find Oblivion more interesting, but then again, probably not. There is probably some magic elixir of mods that I could install in Oblivion that would make it into like a really neat experience, but I don't know what.
And
that
everybody is naked.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And none of them have fucked up monster faces anymore. And I'm not just talking about the monsters. I mean, just everyone had a fucked up weird monster face.
Were their heads rotating 180 degrees? Yeah. Yeah.
Have you guys been playing any video games other than Final Fantasy VII and Ocarina of Time?
I started playing Picross 3D again. And it continues to be awesome. And
on the DS?
Yep. Yeah, anybody that...
So you brought your DS, but not your 3DS?
No, I've been playing it on the 3DS.
Okay.
But it is not 3D, ironically.
Yeah. Anybody that's into like those sorts of logic puzzles like Picross and also has a DS or a 3DS...
So if you're into Picross and 3D...
Yes.
3D Picross might just be the game for you.
Might be. And it turns out like the free download content, there's like another 700 odd friggin' puzzles.
Oh my god, yeah. Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
I tried that. I'm a big fan of Picross, just as a kind of a time waster.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried the 3D Picross like last year at Comic-Con when that was making the rounds. And it was like, I was really excited about the idea of it. But then when it came time to actually play it, I was just like, I don't think I want to do this.
Some of the levels with a lot of stuff going on, you spend a lot of time on them, and if you screw up, it's kind of frustrating having to start all over again.
Yeah, well...
Because I'm all about getting
that,
like...
Yeah, because this time I was like, all right, this time I'm not going to worry so much about getting all three stars.
Oh,
but
okay.
Turns out...
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I still am. the other thing I played, what was it? Oh, I played that new Theatrhythm or Theatrhythm, I don't know how to pronounce it, Final Fantasy game on the 3DS. Which is basically just a rhythm game, except all the songs are songs from all the various Final Fantasy games. And it looks really pretty, and mechanically it's sound, and it's very well polished, but I can't really recommend it unless you've got huge Final Fantasy nostalgia, because it's otherwise not... I mean, it's got some interesting stuff going on, because it's got...
How does the gameplay work?
It's got... okay, so you pick a party of guys, which are all characters, main characters from the various Final Fantasy games, and of course, the ones you really want to play as all start out locked, so you're like White Mage from Final Fantasy II or whatever. And it's basically a rhythm game like other rhythm games, except... Your characters, every time you beat a song, your characters get XP and level up and their stats increase.
Well, I mean, rhythm game like Uendon?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's like just different stuff you have to do on the screen.
Yeah, there's like... how much detail do I want to go into that? Okay, so there's three different types of songs. There's songs that's like battle music, and there's songs that's field music when you're traveling around in that game, and there's... like special event songs, like whatever the Final Fantasy was, Aeris dying, or the opera scene in one of them. And so the battle segments are, you've got your four characters lined up on the screen, and there's lines and dots flow down the lines, and as a dot gets right up next to one of your characters, you tap and hold or flick, depending on whether there's an icon in the bubble, and if you do it with the right timing, then your characters attack the monster that is on the other side of the screen, and if you miss, the monster attacks your guys. And so if you've leveled your characters up so they have more hit points, you have a better chance of getting through that, even if you mess up a few times.
Oh, okay.
And there's the field music one is it's just one line, and your guy is running to the right with like scrolling background, and every time you miss, your character stumbles, and if you get all the way through the song and your character has not stumbled too much, then you get like a treasure chest. And if your character has leveled up their agility, then they can run farther in a shorter amount of time, so stumbles hurt you less.
Okay.
And I forget what the special event one is like in that regard, but it's that kind of thing. So you're playing these songs and your characters level up, and
it's just Eris's corpse is decomposing.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, a fly will take off and you have to hit it.
And yeah, and you level up and unlock new songs. And
what platform is this on?
3DS. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, it's cool. It's just the Final Fantasy music is not something I'm really inherently into. And
yeah, I never really understood why. Yeah, everybody gets
and
so,
so much
about
of it
that.
Is really like symphonic and ballady. Whereas for like a rhythm game, I really want something with a heavy beat to it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a remix section after you beat the main plotline.
But yeah, I mean, it's okay. If you're really into rhythm games or really into Final Fantasy, then I can recommend it. But if you're kind of eh about the both of them, then I would probably skip it.
What about you, Kevin?
I have had time to play almost zero video games besides the assignment. I've been continuing to play a little bit of Fusio. I started working on the 4x4 levels. The first couple of 4x4 levels are way simpler than most of the 3x3 levels. So if you feel like you're getting stuck and you're like, oh man, I should never even open up the 4x4 ones, just try, because the first ones are very, very easy. Having more space allows them to do some more interesting things. Like the puzzle that I'm currently stuck on is just a bunch of stuff and filters, and you're supposed to use the filters to separate the colors, and then you have to separate a bunch of stuff and then recombine and separate just to move things across the screen. They start being a lot more about like traversing the space than it is about like modifying the pieces, and I'm sure that eventually it's gonna be both. It's like modifying stuff and just getting across the screen. And that's kind of interesting, because it's like they kind of are taught you all the operations. I mean, they like literally had a tutorial where they taught you the operations, but then they like everything was just tightly packed, so you kind of had access to everything right away. And then you have to, I think as it gets more and more space, it's going to be like, okay, I have a bunch of operations, but I need to figure out how to get what I want over to them.
I mean, the possibility space, which is already sprawling, becomes just suicide inducing.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I'm curious whether I will stick with it. It's a really intense puzzle game, though. I like it, and I like the fact that I can play it for a little bit and then put it down, and I don't feel like compelled to beat them all because they're so hard. So
I need to get back into Space Chem.
Yeah, I'm like a third or halfway through that, and I want to go back to that as well.
Yeah, not my kind of thing at all.
Oh, it's so good though.
Did you ever play with like redstone in Minecraft?
No, never.
I resisted it for a long time, but it is awesome. It is a lot of fun.
No, I'm sure that it is for a certain kind of temperament.
You were like literally a programmer, and like this is like fun, like abstract programming with Legos, right? Like how is that not awesome to you?
I guess. I mean, I just like having to. I don't like playing Minecraft with the wiki open, really.
But you start to learn some of the basic structures, and like I will often just try to figure something out for a couple minutes just to see if I can
like work out how to make your own flip flop or whatever.
I also feel like when I was messing with it, there was a lot of stuff that I couldn't tell if this was like a bug or not implemented yet, or if I was doing it wrong.
It is non-obvious, but once you spend an hour with it, you start to understand what they're doing. And it was, you know, I don't know, just making machines that do things. It's somehow more satisfying.
I was trying to figure out how to make a secret door, and it just wasn't really working.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, there's it's temperamental, I guess, is a better way of putting it. But it's it's consistent. So once you learn what is going on, it's a lot of fun.
And I also think it bothers me a little bit. The applications of the Redstone stuff require you to have so much machinery that it's hard to really.
You can't just have a secret door in an otherwise like
right
sprawling castle.
Yeah, you have to have the room for the pistons to move in and out. And
yeah. When I designed my giant structure, I designed each floor such that there was like a lot of space between the usable floors so that I could have a bunch of stuff going on, which I think has been great, but also the thing is gigantic. So it's harder to actually get enough blocks to build it.
Right.
So what about you? What have you been playing?
I played a little bit of it's a new like sort of Hero Academy kind of game called Outwitters.
Okay.
Where you're these weird, I don't know, like fish. It's on a hex grid. It's very much like Hero Academy, except simplified. It's Hero Academy with much smaller numbers.
Okay. So that makes you happy.
It does, but I'm just fucking terrible at it. Like, I'm so bad at tactical combat.
Is it PvP or is it?
It's PvP.
PvE.
Yeah, I'm still in the sort of like ranking mat because I've only played like two games
of
it. And I feel like I'm just going to lose all of them and then it's going to start ranking me against other people who've lost all of their games and then maybe it will be fun. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's. You move around on a hex grid. You have different kind of units that you can buy. You have a lot more control over it. There's a lot less randomness. Okay. There might be no randomness, actually.
But you're a fish?
You're a team of fish.
You're a school?
You can shark. Can't move very fast, but hits real hard. There's a squid that heals everyone around them.
Okay.
There's an octopus sniper.
Okay.
Seahorse scout.
Sea party.
It's pretty beautiful and cute.
Yeah. So you like this game and everything in this game?
I do. Little bags. You get little bags. I don't know.
Seahorse bags?
I don't know that I'm really going to play it a lot, but I don't know. I also haven't had time to play anything. I've just been getting that beta out and getting the KOL stuff done, getting Comic-Con prepped. It's just been like...
It has kind of been nonstop lately.
Yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to a day or two that I can just kind of relax. Just
stare at a carpet. And
vegetate for a little bit, yeah.
You should get some get some drugs. Make staring at the carpet more fun.
Oh, okay. Sure. Or your hands.
Like Advil.
Or just some bitter carpet.
Some Advil.
Yeah. Just take a bunch of Advil. Just stare at something.
I don't
this doesn't
hurt I'm not at sure all. That I'm not sure that you know how drugs are supposed to work.
Yeah, but other than that, the assignment some and that was all.
Yeah.
It's a big week for work, slow week for games. What's in the news, Kevin?
Oh, I probably should have used that.
Looked up some news.
No, that I did. I just, hold on for a second. Okay, so the big news, or at least I consider this big news, is that the European Union passed a ruling on some sort of court case that was going on over there. And basically the gist of it is that it is legal in the EU now to resell video games, even digital downloads. This is a weird situation.
I mean, did they say anything about ensuring that you have deleted your copy?
I mean, it would still be illegal. It would be illegal for you to sell a copy of digital download, right? So that is some weird gray area.
Does this actually change anything? Because it's probably still against the terms of service.
That was what they were specifically striking down.
Oh, was that you cannot write terms of service forbid?
I highly doubt, though, that it affects. Like, because of this, Steam is not going to be forced to provide a means for you to do it.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, there's a bunch of things that are unclear. Like how does this work? How do I resell a copy? But it is a consumer's right now in the EU that if they want to, they can resell it. And so I don't know what that means exactly. It's you know, there's a lot of fallout from this that has yet to strike ground or whatever. So... but I mean, there's some overarching questions of like, what is this good for developers? Is this good for consumers? I mean, the argument I think is that it's good for consumers, except the fact that if by this decision people can't afford to make software, then consumers are going to be sad, right?
I mean, I think people are going to make the same arguments about this as they do about the used games secondary market, that like, oh no, it's actually better for the world for you to buy all your games used.
It's better for the world to
buy. That's what people who are really enthusiastic about. Like, I feel not quite as strongly against buying used games as I feel against piracy.
Right. But I don't think I would ever... that's the thing. I don't think I would condemn someone for buying a used copy of a game. Like,
I would... I mean, I think I probably would if I were drunk.
Okay.
But I would not... I just... You know, I used to do it, but then, like, sort of becoming involved, like, you know, getting to the point where I made a living making video games.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We don't fucking sell DVDs for a PlayStation 3, right? But, I mean, it's still, like...
But, I don't dislike libraries. Like, you know, like...
Yeah, no, you're right. And I don't feel bad about buying books used. I mean, I buy a lot of used books. But I don't know why I feel... Like I said, I don't feel nearly as strongly about this as I feel about, you know, like... Piracy is like going to a library and photocopying
or an entire book. Or stealing from a library.
Yeah, or stealing a book from a library. Well, no. It's more like photocopying, right?
Sure, sure.
Except it has the... No, photocopying is wrong because it kills trees. I posted... There's a sort of a lively discussion in the Video Games Hot Dog forums about this. And I posted, you know, my take is that, like, I feel like I have a responsibility to consume video games in the way that gives... under the terms that the developers want me to do it, right? The developer would rather me buy the game new than used.
Yeah, but they would also rather you buy it for $200 than for $10, right?
Right, so, but they're not offering me the ability to buy it for $200, right? Like, I see your argument, but I think that's
and just, I raise you.
Well, but I mean that's just a sort of argumentative tactic that could be applied to anything anywhere, right? And it gets into well, if that's how you feel, then why don't you give all of your disposable income to the developers that you like and not expect anything in return?
You kind
of
do.
Well, it's different. Yeah, well, it's different. That's my counter argument. But I don't know. I feel like going to GameStop, GameSpot. GameStop talks. Games Bell, and I'd like a Doritos Call of Duty.
Please. Yes, Modern Warfare Grande.
If they say, you know, you can buy this for $50 or you can buy a used copy for $45, what that's basically saying is, do you want to give, you know, EA $25 and the developers $10 and GameSpot $15. I have no idea if that adds up. Or do you want to give GameSpot $45?
Well, but I mean, they bought it for $10 or $15 or whatever, right? Well,
like, $35, whatever. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I feel like choosing. I mean, this was my supposition in this forum thread. I feel like choosing to buy a used copy of the game sort of actively harms the developers. It's like you're getting their work without paying them for it. There's the argument that somebody paid for it, right?
Yeah, no, somebody, but also, like, does a used market sort of capture a subset of the population that
people say that
wouldn't be able to afford the full game? People say
that
it does,
but in that specific case, I absolutely do not believe that selling this game for $45 used captures a significant enough section of the market that would not buy it for $50 new, mm-hmm. that it makes any difference. You know, and they talk about, well, more people buy it new because they know that they can sell it and get some of their value back from it. And it's like, that I don't think is necessarily true, because a lot of people buy games on Steam that right. you can't resell.
But you know? You also buy them for 75% off.
Yeah, maybe you do.
I mean... Some like but, I, mean, I buy also, a, I buy a lot of my games on Steam
yeah, at on sales
significant
sure,
discount
sure I mean and it you know and I mean that's the thing like do I feel a responsibility to not buy games on sale because that gives more money to the developers? Like I don't know if I believe I do or not. It's I don't know how far I'm going to take my own.
It would be neat
convictions if here
buying a used copy also gave the original author some of the money. I mean, that it clearly doesn't, you know, that's not how the system works, but yeah. I think that would be, that would alleviate a lot of the ideological concerns that I have. But so assuming that there are games that you want to play in some sort of timely manner, I feel like there's going to always be a rush to buy a new, like a bunch of new versions of it when it comes out, right? And then after it's been out for a while, you can potentially get it new if it's still, you know, being published or whatever. Like, you know, we play a lot of abandonware games, and I don't think we feel bad about that.
I kind of do.
Well, but like in some of these cases, there's literally no way to give the developer money.
Yeah, I mean, in some cases there is. It's just you could give them money. Well, maybe not give the developer money, right? Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, do I download this ROM or do I find on a used eBay
copy of
a
it?
a used CD-ROM of a PlayStation 1 arcade compilation, which is technically a thing that they sell somewhere that would give me a legal copy of this game. You know, I mean, it gets with games that are 20 years old, it gets to be a weirder thing to think about.
Okay,
I mean, I guess my feelings against buying used games are literally just about the situation where you walk into a GameStop and do you want to buy this used for $10 or $5 less than the new copy that mm-hmm. you just asked me for,
right.
Which is what they will do because they make a lot more money off of the used one, and that is where I think, like, everybody says no, this is great for developers, but then developers are like, fuck you, no, it's not. And we're supposed to listen to the people who are. My contention in this forum thread is that is a thing that is actively harmful to the industry, and there is no rationalization for it other than self-interest, which I don't think is a bad rationalization for things. I just think it is definitely not a good one. Right? I mean, because I feel like if you were presented with, okay, well, you can either buy this for $50 or you can pay a hobo $45 to steal it from someone. There are a lot of people who would say, well, $45 is less than $50 and, you know, not hurting anybody if I buy this through a channel that they don't want me to buy it through. Right? You know, and they'll complain that, like, they'll say developers like it. It's good for them when you get a secondary market for games. But fucking developers putting these online codes in here that make it so they're trying to get you to buy it new. And it's like, well, who do you think knows better whether it hurts them or not? It's trivial to want to frame EA as like this big monolithic evil thing that is just rolling around in your money. But then you look at stuff like, you know, the Prototype Studio, mm-hmm. right? Like, maybe if more people had bought that game new instead of used, they wouldn't have gone out of business. Like, a lot of the games at GameStop are by studios that have already gone out of business because they spent too much money making their games and didn't sell enough copies.
So
right?
Here's a question. Maybe they spent too much money making their games.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's... Either way, you know, those are two numbers, and
okay,
you can make them closer by making one bigger or one smaller.
But do we let the market? Do we let the market decide?
Well, I think the argument
you can only have a market for used games if there was originally some kind of market for new games, right? It's not like there's going to be a single copy of this game that gets purchased and then that one is just passed around to everybody who wants to play it in
that
turn.
That is certainly implausible for a game on physical media. It becomes more and more plausible with digital.
Well, but if it's right. copied, then where it's like, granted, gets to be weird because of the whole like
mm-hmm. because of the fact that you can't transfer the original to someone else.
Yeah, it doesn't mean
it's automatically.
I guess
it's a
question of why does the game industry not like the used market? Is it because they are greedy and they want an extra yacht to line their building-sized swimming pool with? Or is it because they want to be able to continue paying the salaries of the people that make video
Do
games?
Do authors like used bookstores?
No.
Okay, so I mean it's...
I mean, I've seen certainly some of them don't. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I mean, if I cared about literature, then I would probably feel just as strongly about this. You know? Nowadays I generally buy books new because unless you can't buy it new.
Do painters care about people reselling their art instead of people buying new paintings from them?
I don't know.
I don't
How many people on earth make a living by making and selling paintings?
I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's certainly smaller than the number of people who make video games.
Sure.
Right. It takes a lot more dudes to make a video game. I mean, you know, movies, which are similar in scope to video games in terms of the amount of money and the number of people and the amount of time that it takes to put them together, like, they certainly don't like a secondary market.
But they don't, like, you know, used copies of DVDs are readily exchanged, you know, and there's a Netflix thing. So, like, Netflix is another example of a situation where I'm paying some third party to acquire copies of these movies and then ship them to me on a short term.
Netflix has a license from
the... Right. Well, I mean, that's...
For their physical DVD. I'm not talking about streaming. I'm talking about, like, you know, they are basically a nationwide lending library that I have a membership to, right?
Well, but it's not... No, because you pay for it. So they're like a... That I have they're a like paid an extremely, membership
to.
But it's... So that makes it a rental store and not a lending library, right? I think there is a critical difference in that...
But it's a service.
There is money going to the people. They have to buy DVDs from them in the first place. And they have to buy those DVDs under, like, a legitimately negotiated set of terms with the people producing the DVDs.
Right.
Right? And, I mean, that's the... Yeah, I don't know. It's fucking complicated.
Right. Like, that's... I'm not really sure how I feel about any of this.
I mean, I think I will continue to just buy, like... I will go to Steam and I will pay whatever they are asking for the game that I want to play. I'm not going to start buying used copies of digital games. Like,
that's a weird notion. I mean, but who knows what the marketplace will look like in 5 years, because maybe you go to Steam and it's like they're forced by, you know, the law of the land to be like, would you like to buy it here? Would you like to buy it for $4 from our partner site?
I don't think that'll happen, because...
I mean, I don't think they can make them...
Yeah, I mean, publishers don't run used bookstores, and...
But Steam, for by and large, is not the publisher for most of the... They are the... They're the publisher. Wait. Like, Amazon, right, is a clearinghouse for a lot of objects, and on Amazon, I can go and buy something new, or there's a button right next to it that's buy used for less money, right? Mean, and yeah, like, for most of the games on Steam are not made by
Amazon.
Valve.
Does that because they get a cut from it?
Yeah, I
mean, that's a
Amazon,
business.
Amazon
decision
doesn't have to do that. Like, right. Amazon purchased half.com so that they could.
Valve
do that
will also get a cut from selling a used copy, right? Like the developer might not get anything
Is that true?
I'm saying. Like, who knows what this landscape is going to look like 5 years from now?
I mean, Valve already has the framework for people to be able to trade Steam games as
codes, right? Yeah.
And so, I mean, right now they only let you do it in a way that's not, like, open to really obvious abuse.
Right.
You know, but... And it's like anything that you buy at a deep discount, you can't do that with, right? Because, I mean, then that's the thing. So Steam can never do a sale again. If you have to start being able to resell this stuff, Steam can never do, today only, $5 for this game.
Why not?
Because somebody will buy it for $5 and then resell it for $20.
Why is that
the next day when it's $20?
And?
Well, I mean, to me, that sounds like fucking horse shit, and I want to kick that guy in the nuts.
But that's arbitrage.
Right, and arbitrage, I think, although it is a time-tested and
that's
awesome
a cool
thing,
word.
Hate everyone who does it. I feel like that is the absolute worst use of brain power that can possibly occur in a market.
Huh. I mean, that's kind of what makes markets interesting to me, right? Yeah.
Sure.
Because if everybody had perfect knowledge and everything was just at the price point where there was no profit, you know, like, nothing would ever happen.
You know, I would rather hang out with Harlan Ellison than the world's nicest investment banker.
Huh.
I mean, we've had this conversation, like, I don't think that retail establishments are, like, a meaningfully noble pursuit. Right? Like, I don't know. It's weird.
But you like to buy things.
I do like to buy things, but I don't think that any value is added to the... I mean, I guess some value is added to the world because somebody gets to eat and raise their, you know, provide a house for their kids in there being a middleman who takes a cut of a transaction.
Well, okay, but if you want to buy a bed, like, do you want to have to, like, hunt down a guy who knows how to, like, cut down some trees and then send, like, get that over to somebody who knows how to...
Yeah.
there's like all kinds of middlemen involved in you like buying a piece of furniture.
No, but I also don't
want
to drive all around town to find a place that is selling a bed for $100 cheaper than the place that's near me. I mean, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It seems to me like the possibility of that kind of arbitrage would just make it so, like, if you could just sell your Steam games to other users, Steam would never have a sale again. And I don't think that that's what people want.
I don't know. I'm curious whether that's true at all. Like, they have a sale. A bunch of people buy copies of games in the hopes that they'll be able to sell it eventually again. Right. And so the developer gets a bunch of money, Steam gets a bunch of money. Then, you know, 6 months later, there's all these people with copies of it and they're trying to sell it used. They're like, does the price just basically stay at that sale price forever?
I think it would. And so when Gabe talked about the Steam sales and saying like, this basically doesn't seem to have any impact on the amount of money that people spend on this stuff, right? Like having this game go on sale, no more or fewer people are buying it on an average day after the sale than were buying it before the sale, right? It's just the sale captures a bunch of people that will buy it at that price or whatever. And
that's a pretty compelling argument towards the used market actually capturing a set of people that, like, in a world where you don't have Steam sales, where that there's just a thing for sale.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there were some statistics posted in that thread about book sales, mm-hmm. right? And that, like, it was something like 85% of the people that bought something used would not have bought it new by whatever method they figured out.
Yeah, that's a weird...
How do you do that? But that's still 15%, right? And the margins that you run making things that are really expensive and then relying on the fickle public to buy enough of them for you to keep the doors open, like 15% is fucking huge.
We had a successful couple of Kickstarters, and I don't mean to sound like a crazy Kickstarter fanatic or whatever, but like, I like the model of Kickstarter. I like the model
but we managed to successfully raise about 20% of what it cost make the thing.
No, I know. I'm not talking about our particular instantiation.
For the comic book, sure.
I'm not talking about specifics. I'm talking about the idea of somebody having an idea for something, and before they go and try to produce a bunch of it, trying to guess how many of those things are going to be sold, being able to be like, here's this thing I want to make or do. Who wants some? And like being able to like know before you have to do anything. Like I think that like Detroit should not make a bunch of cars and then hope a bunch of people are going to buy them. I think you should go to a website and be like, this is the car that I want. And then they make it and send it to you or whatever, right?
5 months later. I mean, that's...
Sure. But, you know, or because that would be the way to do things, it would take a week or something, right? Like, make to order as opposed to make and hope that somebody buy. Like, it just seems like a terrible waste of resources to make a bunch of shit in the world hoping that someone's going to buy it, because a bunch of that shit just gets thrown away.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's probably just way cheaper to do it, and that's why they do it that way. Failure prone? I don't know, man. I feel like everything that I know about the manufacturing world now suggests that it is extremely impractical to set up new manufacturing facilities in the U.S. Like,
sure,
just from a financial standpoint, sure. And so that's why nobody does it. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're probably right that a utopia would be better than what we have now.
But I mean, I think it could be possible. You know, maybe part of the reason that you can't manufacture a bunch of stuff in the U.S. is because so much of the stuff that's made everywhere gets thrown away because you make more than people ever want.
I mean, it's hard I think it's dangerous to jump the gun on Kickstarter as a new model for the way that the world should work when Kickstarter is a model that works making extremely niche luxury goods for a bunch of overprivileged white dudes with more money than they need. Right? I mean,
I don't have enough information to feel like that's necessarily their whole market, right?
I mean, I don't know that you could... I mean, maybe you could... This is a new kind of flour mill that will make it easier for people to make their own food at home, and you do a Kickstarter for that. But I feel like it's more likely that, like, no, this is a new kind of cutting board for your expensive artisanal cheeses, right? Like, it's just, it, this is a new $100 stainless steel stand for your $900 phone.
Right.
Right. And that this model is a really great way to get a bunch of shit into the hands of people who already have a million times more shit than they need.
Okay. You're just citing specific examples of things that have, like, been successful so far on Kickstarter.
I'm saying that this
as a model in general for consumption of things would be great. Like, what if there was a central clearinghouse for all commerce in the United States, let's say, right? I'm making shit up here. And people would propose what they wanted to do, and then you could see who was...
And you would use the magical, imaginary infrastructure that gets it in front of poor people. Not the internet, because they don't have that. You'd also have to tell everybody about it. I mean, I think that what you are proposing requires there already to be a utopia in place for it to work.
I mean, I don't know that it needs to be a utopia. Like, who knows what kinds of, like, communication systems and, like, information transmittal systems we could have if this was how things were done. Instead of like, having retail stores, which you think are a waste of time, right? We get rid of all the...
No, I don't think that they're a waste of time. I just don't think that they're an inherently... I don't think that buying things and then selling them at a higher price is an inherently noble pursuit, the same way that making furniture out of trees is an inherently noble pursuit.
Okay. Wait, so making things out of trees is an inherently noble pursuit?
I think so, yeah.
Huh.
I think that creating something new is a more noble act, no matter what it is, whether it's a necessary thing or not. I think that the creation of something new is a nobler act than buying something that somebody else made and selling it to a third person at a profit and then using the profits to buy toilet paper.
Which was also made from trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I want is for the people who make things to be able to directly go to the people and get reliable information about how many they want to make. I think this is
going to be looked back on as a bad period of history for middlemen, you know, as means of communication are more and more democratized, at least among the privileged elite that we're all lucky enough to be in, you know.
So you say the privileged elite, and, like, even in third world countries, a lot of people have cell phones, right? Like,
okay. Well, let's call everybody and see if they want to buy a car so that we'll know exactly how many cars to make.
I'm saying that 20 years ago, we had no idea that so many more people in the world would be connected through wireless networks.
Right. No, right? Absolutely.
So, like, I just think it's possible that the world's lands... I mean, you know, the singularity's coming, man.
Well,
singularity's coming.
You know, here's the thing. What happens when everybody has a 3D printer?
Well, right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, what happens is you still, you know, read the Diamond Age. Even in an age with no scarcity, you will still figure out a way for there to be downtrodden poor people.
Sure.
Because that's just a fundamental aspect of the way that humanity works.
Is nothing you can trying hard to keep somebody down.
Yeah. You can't let them manufacture guns or they'll violently rise up against you.
Speaking about niche, expensive things on Kickstarter, Ouya launched their console on Kickstarter a couple of days ago. And they had, like, $1 million goal.
Also in the news, the world's largest grain of salt has been discovered.
So what is this thing? This is the first I've heard of it.
It's a console. It is a
$100.
It is a console. Potential pipe dream, and all of the pipes are filled with snake oil.
I don't think it's quite that bad.
It is $100. Well, it's an amazing idea, and what they have done is they have sold an amazing idea for
$4.2 million.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see how much it's gone up since I loaded this page. $4.231 million in the first 3-4 days of the Kickstarter. It is basically an Android console.
Yeah.
And it's got some pictures of a controller that are not real. That's mock-ups of a controller. They're messing around with designs. They're supposedly going to launch in March with a store where you can buy games from people and all this, the delivery platform and everything.
Android games?
Android games. Well, it's Android driven.
Android games that have been ported to this particular fragment of the Android marketplace.
So like two games.
We'll see.
Yeah.
This is the thing that's like super weird.
Two clones of Angry Birds.
Yeah, two Angry Birds clones and a Minecraft clone.
Yeah.
This is going to be very interesting to follow over the next year, I think. The console itself is kind of cool looking. It's designed by the guy that made like the Jam Box, and he was on the...
The what?
The Jawbone Jam Box.
Oh, okay.
The Jam... Tuckered bag,
the jaw jam bump, sack. The jaw bag jam sack, if you want to use it in the shower. So you have to put it inside a Ziploc bag.
And like apparently the creative team is very, very strong or whatever for the product itself, right? Mm-hmm. But then it is just a platform, and I don't think they have any in-house content development at all. And the idea that it's being launched with is just that, like, this open kind of open source,
it's meant to be very, very favorable to independent developers. The dev kits are free,
yeah.
And
I've seen a thing that is a port that you plug your iPhone into and you play your iPhone games on your TV. How is this different?
Well, there's no standardization, so it's going to be more like the Android marketplace, so it'll be rife with piracy and mostly Minecraft clones.
Oh.
I don't know.
I'm very cynical about this. I mean, so when I first heard of this, I thought, wow, this sounds great. And then I realized, no, wait, you know what? The totally open console that there is now that's like really favorable conditions for indie developers and stuff is the PC, and I already have one. It has a massive install base.
Yep.
A lot of existing success stories. It's what everybody develops on anyway.
It will be interesting to see if this does anything at all. You know, there will be 60,000 or 70,000 of them in a bunch of different homes, maybe. And yeah, I mean, I think it will happen, and I think people will play around with it. But I'm maybe it will be a revolution in the console market. I don't know.
It sounds a little Linuxy to me. Whether or not there's anything wrong, like, I think in general there's nothing wrong with that philosophy. I am down on a lot of the particular ways in which the things that those that I refer to as Linux assholes do just fucks with my ability to do my job. Also, they've did a ton of work that allows me to do my job in the first place. Sure. So,
yeah, that's true.
It is extremely...
They have laid a lot of groundwork for us to be doing right now.
For this. Yeah, I mean, Linux assholes wrote this Windows software and OS. I'm pretty sure these microphones are open source.
Okay, sitting across the table from me, but the fact that you,
listeners, yeah,
across the universe can hear my words is in large part due to a bunch of software that
doesn't have to
running
be,
on Linux.
We could be running it on Microsoft Internet Server.
But
is that a thing anymore? what was that even called?
I don't remember the Active Server.
Well, that pages. Was, yeah, but they had a Microsoft's version of Apache. I don't remember what their actual...
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, screw all that stuff.
But what I am worried about is that now these guys have got some funding, and there are going to start to be these schisms in their approach.
They're going to come to your house, knock on the door, say, "Sorry, buddy, your console got forked."
Yeah, and so now which one of these do you want? I mean,
yeah.
I am particularly, like, I like the iPhone, and I like the experience that Apple's walled garden delivers to me more than anything that I've heard or seen about fucking Android phones.
Yeah.
Android phones, in my experience, are an absolutely bewildering clusterfuck of confusion. And
you're a bad audience for that, because like a lot of video games are, you know, the same.
Oh yeah,
kind of
no, absolutely. But I like, and you know, and I hear stories from developers saying that like that just it doesn't make any sense to develop for Android because the platform is so fragmented and piracy is everywhere, and nobody buys anything. It's like you make 95%. If you release a game on Apple iOS and on Android, you're going to spend 95% of your time fixing shit that doesn't work on various Android devices,
right.
And you get 95% of your income from Apple.
I think having a platform that is more standardized will help that, right? Like if you're like, okay, I'm going to start developing for this thing.
Yeah, although there's the argument that like it's not really, right? I mean, it is standardized. Like this doesn't...
Actually, that's an interesting point too, is like this is something that will, you know, unless it raises $400 million or whatever, it's not going to have even close to the install base of iOS.
If they could raise enough money to make it free to anyone who wants it,
to make the hardware free,
yeah, then suddenly it's a thing. I mean, you
that
know, it's
make any sense.
It's
though,
cheaper like. Than a it's cheaper than a PC. If it has solid gaming hardware on it, and this became a thing where you could spend $100 on this, and then they've also got this like weird like all games are free is one of the things in there, and what that means is that
you'll at
all
least be able to play a free
either
demo.
Have a demo or they're free to play with the cash shop. Or they're free if you steal them is one of their options. But yeah, I mean, it is super pie in the sky. And I think best case scenario, it's not quite as good as the PC.
Sure. Yeah. But you're right that a PC requires, you know,
it requires a lot of savvy. It requires probably
hundreds of dollars.
$100. Yeah. I mean,
but
I don't know. I mean, you could buy one laptop per child for $100, and
that was the other thing that the guy
some sweet crank game.
The guy also worked on one laptop per child or whatever.
I wonder if you could buy one of those little video game consoles that come in the back of an airplane seat,
so that you could play extremely slow refresh rate trivia.
Yeah.
or
Breakout. Or,
broken touchscreen Sudoku.
Yeah, because. Because, you know, it seems to me if you can get it for less than $100, I think you might be ahead of the game on this thing.
Yeah.
You know what? It's exciting, but every time I see something that I'm dubious about on Kickstarter, I think, fuck, is this the thing that
crashes
down this house of cards before it gets a chance to,
yeah,
you know, before it gets... Like, all I want is for Kickstarter to continue to put a bunch of awesome games. Like, if a game as good as FTL comes out once a month for the rest of my life, then I'm happy. Kickstarter has done its job. But, you know, if something like this just makes it so people don't trust it anymore,
yep.
And who knows what happens. You know, I mean, what does happen, right? Like, what the fuck is to stop these guys from just
walking away with hundreds of million dollars?
That's not going to be. I don't think it's going to be hundreds of millions.
No, I know, but there is nothing save a
class action
later lawsuit
could do it, right? But and I mean, you know, I don't know. Would Kickstarter surrender the? Hey, well, you know, what do you think would happen? What do you think Kickstarter would do? Because they were like, look, you signed this thing. Like, we're not responsible for this. And I don't think they should be responsible for it. Because we can't put it on them to know whether people are trustworthy or not.
We are responsible to provide what we have promised to the people who have backed our Kickstarter.
Or what?
Or they can seek legal action against us.
Kickstarter can seek legal action against
the individuals.
People, individuals, yeah.
I think Kickstarter
I mean, do you think Kickstarter? But then do you think Kickstarter would help? Like, if somebody was like, hey, we want to put together a class action suit, can I have all these addresses
and
names?
Yeah, I think they would. I think they would. They would facilitate that.
We should just start a class action suit so we can get a whole bunch of names and email addresses. We can just be like...
That is one way of trying to approach the world.
Man, this is great. Here, we can do the old double deuce. We start, we come up with a really awesome idea. And we do a Kickstarter, we make millions of dollars, then we run away with the money, and then we form a law firm, and we say, hey, Kickstarter, we're suing those pricks, can you give us all the names and email addresses?
Which we already had, because we were the ones that made the...
Oh.
Yeah.
You've discovered the flaw in my plan.
No, I've discovered a flaw.
Okay.
But
well, no, we form a splinter group that's a different law firm.
No, we form a law firm, and we sue every other Kickstarter project.
For making us look bad. You guys, the only reason that our runaway to the Bahamas with $9 million Kickstarter is looked at as a failure is because all of your stupid successes. This is good. Also, we have trademarked every word in all of your games because we bought a dictionary and just stamped it with a trademark stamp.
That's how that works.
And another one that says penis.
So Steam, since we were talking about them earlier as well, announced their Greenlight program. Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm. Yeah, vaguely.
This is, so I think what I understood by reading their like sort of introduction to it or press release or whatever was that they are basically allowing the community to decide what games are going to be released on Steam, at least to have a more significant role in the process. Yeah. So developers upload their games, you know, in alpha or beta or whatever to Steam. People talk about them and they start voting for games that the community wants to be released on Steam. And if it reaches some threshold, which they did not specify, then...
Wait, so Steam delivers the game to people?
I don't know.
For testing? Or
I don't know. I don't know if it's just screenshots and a video. I don't know.
I also wonder, I mean, is this replacing their current...
I got the sense that it's going to be adjunct, because I think they still want to be able to have editorial control. Yeah. But I think what it lets smaller shops build up their groundswell and get their games out on Steam.
Because, yeah, I mean, I guess the indie studio is always going to say, hey, Steam, my game is really good. And right. That doesn't mean as much as, hey, Steam, my game is really good. And here's 10,000 people
who love it. It's possible that they just had too many games for them to review, you know, mm-hmm. And maybe what they're wanting now is just like, let's just farm this out to the community. They'll figure it out on their own. I don't know. I'm not sure what happens now, but we should keep an eye on it.
This is my indie game. It's just a copy of Call of Duty 3 that you don't have to pay for.
No, they talk about not stealing other games.
They say, I'm sure that will stop people from...
They say, what happens if somebody posts my game and they're like, contact us. Contact our legal team.
Here's what we do. We call our legal team and say, hey, somebody posted our game, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, blops.
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 Yeah. We'd like $1 million. We can just
and too hard boiled.
Put this all under the...
EA and BioWare Mythic launched their Ultima Forever.
There's three of us, Riff.
Forever game.
Three hard boiled eggs.
Did you guys hear about Ultima Forever?
No.
It is a free to play MMORPG.
I saw that screen that says FTP MMO, and I was like, oh, so you can it just transmits into the packets over. Yeah.
No.
it's an RPG where you're collecting JPEGs and text files about how to make a bomb.
It's apparently like a continuation, or like a reboot and a continuation of the Ultima 4 game.
With no Garriott. So there's probably not going to be any skeezy microtransaction garage sale minigame in it.
Christ. We should maybe talk about that too a little bit.
Yeah, we should.
Apparently he is not involved. I did not see his name.
Yeah, anymore. Well, no, he's working on Ultimate RPG. Like, I think he maybe doesn't have
the rights.
He doesn't have the ability to use the Ultima franchise at all anymore. I mean, I think he probably sold it to go to space.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, he's working on what he is calling the sort of spiritual successor to Ultima Online.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's probably just going to end up being fucking Farmville.
So the thing that you were talking about is the second gate in the Ready Player One contest led to a game on Facebook. The second gate's game. So the first game was the Stags.
Yeah,
we did that assignment, which was great. It was, you know, it's retro and it's hard but interesting or whatever. And so I had every expectation that these were just going to be different 80s games or 80s game clones or whatever that you'd be playing through to get the puzzle or whatever. And it turns out the second game is this kind of ridiculous, terrible Facebook game where you go around to different garage sales trying to acquire objects. A lot of them are like...
Sponsored objects from the real world.
Like, ads.
Oh, if you like this fake... salt and pepper shaker set, go to Macy's and get the salt and pepper shaker set.
Ew.
Yeah, and you can spend real cash to speed up the process of being able to, like, it's like one of those things where every 5 minutes you get more energy to go out.
Yeah, yeah, so apparently you could spend some money to speed up passing through the second gate. I mean, it also only took, I don't know, Rachel Bess got through it, and it took her
a week,
10 days or 8 days or something without giving them any money, but she just hated every minute
the whole time.
She was just enraged by it.
I hope it turns out that Ernie Klein farmed out the creation of this Arg or whatever to some other guys. And
I am, you know, my guess is probably that he was really excited about getting to work with Richard Garriott, and that, you know, and we knew this from talking to Richard Garriott last year.
Richard Garriott is really excited about
Richard Garriott is very convinced that what he's doing is the next wave. But also, I mean, it seems like Richard Garriott, like, will fully admit that he just kind of doesn't care about games anymore.
He just wants
wants to make money so that he can go back to space. Which is sad, right?
I don't know. Going to space is pretty cool.
Well, going to space is pretty cool, but it makes me sad. I mean, I feel like there was a time when he was genuinely passionate about what he was doing, but maybe not, you know? Maybe all he ever wanted was money. But it doesn't... If all you ever wanted was money, you would not build Britannia Manor.
He couldn't have known that when he was just making D&D 1 through 28, right? Because
That was certainly not his goal in high school, after it was already established that he was not going to be able to go to space.
Right.
Like, when it became clear that he was not going to be able to follow in his father's footsteps and become an astronaut because of whatever. I mean, just because of what... because you wear glasses or...
Yep.
He doesn't wear glasses, but... Actually, I don't know that. Why wasn't he able to be an astronaut?
Flat feet?
Something.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Something hemorrhoids Uranus?
Yeah. I am guessing that Klein was very excited and is probably kind of disappointed in how this all turned out.
Who knows? But, I mean,
you know, maybe it was supposed to be Ultimate RPG, which had a tremendous amount of promise,
and just wasn't ready.
Wasn't finished in time, so it's like, hey, let's do this bullshit McDonald's tie-in. Go out, you know, get this salt here. If you like this salt and pepper shaker, go steal an identical set from McDonald's.
I wonder if Ernie Klein was. Upset that it didn't seem like anybody had found the puzzle hunt before he just mentioned that it was out there.
Well, it was not a very good puzzle, right? The initial thing was not...
I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it, without knowing...
that it exists.
Yeah, like there wasn't enough.
I wonder,
like, the minor variations in it. I mean, the fact that once I knew there was a puzzle, I solved the puzzle without encountering the puzzle.
Yeah. Right.
Is one issue with it.
If that puzzle was not in the ebook, I wonder what proportion of the market for this book is people who bought the ebook compared to the physical.
A friend of mine was reading it. I was like, "Oh, do you know about the puzzle hunt?" And he's like, "No, no." And then I told him, and I was like, "Oh, it's not in the ebook though." And he's like,
Anybody have ever bought anything other than the ebook?
Yeah.
I don't like a book. I like the smell of it. I like the way it feels in my bathtub.
I mean, I'm all about actual books too, but I don't know, something like that book, that story is so completely geared to the sort of person who likes an ebook.
Yeah. That's true.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't really like an ebook.
I do. I like the ebooks.
Yeah. I don't know. I sit and read shit on my phone all day. I don't know why I'm averse to the idea of... I actually downloaded the Kindle app to try and buy Reamdy on it the other day, because I want to read Reamdy, but I don't want to go to a different town where there's still a bookstore in business. And I downloaded the Kindle app, and it knew who I was, and it knew the thing that I had bought before, but then there was just no button to buy anything, and I wasn't sure if I just needed to, like...
I think you need to go
to Amazon's website. And then, that's, I guess...
It's all connected. Yeah. It's all on the cloud.
You'd think there'd be like a... How the fuck did the Kindle app, when I downloaded it, know who I was? Did they at some point authenticate my Amazon account?
I have a Kindle app before,
and it knew who I was without me really doing anything. I don't really understand what happened. I think it maybe just associates your phone's UID with that. So
I think that might be it.
Why is that not enough for them to let you spend some money on it?
It might be. I mean, maybe there is a store in there that just you couldn't find. Mm. There's a quest to get to the store. You haven't unlocked it yet.
Yeah, so that's Ernest Klein.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's at Comic-Con. We should go say hi to him.
Oh, that's a good question.
Give him a high five filled with beer.
Yeah.
High five filled with beer?
Yeah.
Splash.
Did you? This is not. This was not on my news thing at all. But this is another thing that when Rachel was complaining about the game, she was also talking about a friend of hers that got sued by Blizzard. This isn't like a. This isn't actually a news story. This is just sort of a story. He made a program called Glider.
Oh, have you heard about that? I have heard about Glider. Yeah.
And made about $4.5 million selling this program, which basically just automated your character's actions in WoW. And they sued him. And in the first judgment, Blizzard was awarded $6.5 million. Which he did not have, and so he appealed, and the decision was much lower or whatever. But like the process of actually doing all of this was really awful, and he said, "Never get sued, because once you are sued, you are fucked, because everything about you just becomes public record, like his address and all his other stuff. Like strangers, like some stranger left him a 6-pack of beer outside his house." Just being like, hey, you know, sorry about all the crap that's going on or whatever. I really liked your program.
Here's some poison.
it was like Budweiser too or whatever. But you know, it was like beer. But like creepy shit. You know.
I mean, alternatively, maybe the lesson learned is don't make millions of dollars with a program whose only purpose is the violation of somebody else's terms of service.
But, yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't think that there's anything.
He did not violate their terms of service. He just sold something that let other people
sure
do it.
I'm sure he's developing automated.
It's an interesting case to me.
I mean, it's like, you know, do you, like, let's say that I build, like, if I start manufacturing a machine that will open any lock, right? I mean,
like the bunch of machines that already exist?
Yeah, sure. Right. I mean, I feel like that's just dangerous ground to tread on, right? Like, I don't think that there is anything morally wrong with scripting World of Warcraft, but I think that they are well within their rights to
ban the people that do it. To ban the
people that use it, right?
Right.
I do, however, think that it is at the very least ethically neutral to
enable other people to do that?
To enable other people to do it, and it is probably wrong to make millions of dollars enabling other people to do it.
You should not be surprised by getting
I could understand Blizzard being like cease and desist selling this, but I'm a little surprised that
they wanted to make an example of him, right?
Yeah, and, no, I know. I mean, I don't know. This all gets so complicated, right? Like maybe they should make a game that doesn't that is like tolerant of people botting their characters or something.
Yeah, well, I mean,
The Diablo 3 real cash auction house is leading to all kinds of crazy shit. I don't know if you've been following that at all.
I haven't really.
There are people running hundreds or thousands of accounts that are just automated farming, so that they can, like, this guy has 100 accounts in Diablo 3 just farming gold, which nets him like $90 an hour. Or $60 an hour or something like that. And he is actually in contact with Blizzard trying to get them to close some of the loopholes, because it's so easy right now to farm gold that like gold is so rapidly devaluing that it's impossible to farm gold. It's weird, right?
I mean, why don't they ban all of his accounts?
Yeah.
They have been actively banning a bunch of accounts, but it's really hard to tell.
I mean, I guess you only have to have it running for an hour if...
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, like...
To make up for the cost of another license of Diablo 3. Yeah, I mean, I sort of wish we lived in a world where you could trust people not to do shit like that.
I mean, this is the arbitrage thing, right?
Yeah,
They see a way to make some money.
I mean, as much as I like our abuse guy, and I like being able to employ him as, you know, my friend and have him have a job that's good, I wish we didn't have to pay somebody just to stop people from fucking us.
Okay, so... Video games in particular are systems that reward all kinds of different behavior, including exploration, trying to get ahead, right? Yep.
Cleverness, trickiness.
Yeah. And so, like, it is extremely short steps between that and like figuring out a way to take advantage of these systems in ways that the creators never intended.
Well, it's a lot of extremely short steps, right?
And depends.
See, so you'll end up with something like you and the kind of exploits that you used to do, and because you kept the scale down, it was worth tolerating them. Well, A, it was not a thing that I knew about because we were not a big enough operation that I had somebody who would have caught you.
Right.
And it's just weird and kind of lucky that it became a big enough operation that we could deal with shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just... While I get why you think it's cool that they do it, I think it is a thing that makes the environment worse for everybody. In a lot of ways. I mean, but, you know, if for no other reason than, like, instead of paying five other guys to develop content for Diablo 3, they're having to pay five guys to monitor and ban automators.
Right.
Right? And I mean, it's like, you know, it's a big system, and it's not necessarily like money you spend on one thing is money that you're not spending on another thing. I mean, I guess that is necessarily true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you could be
doing those people had to buy, you know, in licenses of the game, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
Unless they bought them used.
Well, I don't think you can.
I know.
Can you?
Who knows? It's tied to your Battle.net account.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was that crazy eBay auction of some guy who had... he claimed full sets. I don't know if that's something you can actually verify, because it's not like that's like a published list somewhere or whatever, but full sets of video games for basically every Sega system, every Nintendo system, and every PC Engine system, which I don't know what that is.
The TurboGrafx 16.
And he sold like a collection that was just all of those games for $1.25 million. So, yeah. That's pretty cool. And they apparently like were almost all near mint in box.
I wonder how much it cost him to acquire that collection.
That is an excellent question. I'm guessing he is a full-time collector trader, because he's, you know, he was saying that like in the collections he would sometimes have gone through like 50 copies of a particular game like in his possession at one time or another, so like, you know, he's actively buying and selling stuff. Mm-hmm. And he always, for his personal collection, would just take the best one,
right,
and set it aside. Mm-hmm. And so like he was upgrading his, like, so everything is like mint or near mint or whatever, which that's cool. But, you know, I don't, some of these games, like, just over time, don't the cartridges degrade? Like,
I don't think so. I mean, there's probably a lot of Nintendo games that would no longer save your progress
because of the batteries
on them. Yeah. But, I mean, I think the cartridges are fairly solid state, right? Unless there's like an EMP pulse.
But I mean, that shouldn't even,
that wipes them out. You could also fix that. I mean, you could burn the ROMs back onto it.
Right.
If you had to. You know, CDs, they say after 20 years start to oxidize.
Yeah.
Even sealed inside the plastic. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. So that's interesting. And you know,
I mean, they're worth more as artifacts.
As artifacts, at this anyway. Point
than they are as...
As playable.
Because you could find... I mean, you're not going to... It would be easier to just download a ROM of a TurboGrafx-16 game and play it on your machine.
20 or 30,000 games in this collection or whatever, so it's like you're never going to be able to play that many games.
Yeah. Werewolf the Last Warrior.
So, yeah.
Wow, that was a lot of news.
Sorry.
It's
been an interesting week. I mean, this is all just like non-Comic-Con stuff. This is all just like out in the world.
We haven't even talked about video game consumables yet.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have time. We're barely going to have time to talk about our assignment. Speaking of which... This assignment, Kingdom Rush,
yes.
iOS. Kevin loved it. Riff barely played it. I hit a wall.
As per normal. Yeah. I mean, I'm just... It seemed like a good, well-polished tower defense game, but I'm just not into tower defense games. I mean, the things that I'm into in games are like exploration and discovery.
You like Plants vs. Zombies?
And I have a weird love-hate relationship with Plants vs. Zombies.
Oh, yeah?
It's like Plants vs. Zombies is a thing like, man, I would really like to unlock a bunch of these mini-games and see what all the plants are, but I can't stand to play more than one or two levels of
really?
It in a row.
Okay, yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I feel like when Plants vs. Zombies first came out, I bought it and just played all of it basically at a stretch.
Yeah.
Plants vs. Zombies is good about just this sort of constant mechanical novelty funnel.
Yeah.
you know, and I think they spent a lot of time trying to make it as compelling an experience as possible.
Yeah, no, it was really good.
Kingdom Rush, the problem that I had with Kingdom Rush that made me, I didn't want to stop playing it. It wasn't like I was like, fuck this game, I'm not playing this game anymore. Every time I went to run it, I was like, yeah, you know, I don't want to commit to spending another 20 minutes playing all the way through this level that I died on the last wave of because of this giant fucking Yeti boss.
When you, oh, because, yeah, I was gonna say, when the bosses, especially because they take all 20 lives, you can't, you have to defeat them to
And it's like, survive. That was a weird, like, double kick in the nuts, too, because it was like, not only is there this guy with more hit points than you've ever seen a thing with who just doesn't, isn't affected at all by melee units, but he also has this novel tower disabling thing.
Oh, right, which, where you have to click on stuff.
Yeah, which becomes this weird, like, you know, he moves really slow and you have to pay a lot of attention the entire time, and you didn't know it was coming, so, you know, you had not spent the entire 20 minutes building up single target damage, which, if you try to do that, then you just don't get there. You don't win the level at all. And so, I just was like, I can't...
You have to have a mix of damage sources.
Yeah, I can't face...
Which you kind of always have to do, though.
Sort of. I just didn't want to do... I understand why people like this game now. Like, because I played it before, but I only got to the first two or three levels, and you don't get anywhere near the variety of mechanical stuff.
Yeah. All the tower unlocks are pretty cool.
Yeah.
The upgrade paths.
Yeah, stuff is super neat.
I was interested when I discovered that you could buy the heroes, but I didn't discover that they existed until I'd already been spending all my stars every level, and it cost like 15 stars, and I was like, well, I'm not going to play the final level.
You can reset them, yeah. You can respec at will.
I didn't know
somebody
that.
Somebody in the forums pointed out that when they found out that you could so easily respec between every level and that you kind of are expected to... That was they. What he said was that was kind of a drag, and I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I liked being able to customize.
If the individual iterations didn't take so long, then I would feel a lot better about that. Trying something 20 out,
20 minutes, probably 15.
Yeah,
20 minutes.
But I mean, that's too long to make zero progress, right? It's like too long to spend.
Sorry. But you're getting better at the game, Zach.
You're not. That's my problem. No, that is my problem. With this, you're not getting better. Okay. If there was checkpointing, then you would be getting better at the game. You said, we just need to make a fucking tower
defense game
that lets you goddamn save
so that
we will...
I'm just...
Maybe somebody will play it and be like, oh, this is how these should be. Why hasn't anybody done it, though? I feel like this is a...
I was trying to make a callback to the Binding of
Isaac. I know you were. I know you
But are. You don't feel... So you honestly don't feel like you're getting better when you, like you see a stage and you're like, oh, okay, well, clearly I needed to have better,
like,
more...
Skill at moving around and dodging stuff in a real-time environment versus skill at making the very limited number of decisions far apart in time is very different.
And maybe that's... Maybe I really appreciate the, like, tactical type of stuff, and I feel like I do actually get much better at that. And I can adjust stuff on that time frame.
See, I mean, I feel like there is, apart from, like, knowing, you know, like, if I were to write down what all the waves consisted of, then I would learn something over multiple plays.
I mean, for me, it was, like, when I got screwed, it was usually like, oh, fuck, on wave 17, there's a bunch of flying units and I haven't prepared for them, right? Like, and so then I had to, like, rethink, okay, I need to have enough...
Yeah, and it's
air
just
assault stuff.
The inherent puzzle in deciding whether I should spend my money on upgrading this tower to the next level or building a couple more towers over here, I just don't think that's an interesting puzzle.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was an interesting puzzle in Geodefense.
Why was Geodefense such a good tower defense game?
Like, I don't know.
Because that is still
both of them. Like,
yeah, but Swarm is better.
Swarm is definitely better. Yeah, you know, you get the puzzle aspects of that where either you barely survive a wave or you don't. Right. You know, and it doesn't take very long.
Yeah, the levels are short and sweet in general. Sometimes not so much, and like you don't have to. That one you can set up some situations where you're juggling, which I'm not a huge fan of the juggling.
Yeah, I don't really
thing, like and you don't that. You just can't do that and. Well, no, you can kind of
in what Kingdom Rush.
Yeah, but it's automated
with those teleport towers.
Yeah, it's automated, which is nicer, I guess. The variety of towers was really cool.
Yep.
Like a bunch of different neat stuff. I spent a lot of time unlocking, like, just getting achievements, because that was kind of fun.
I didn't know there were achievements.
Yeah, there's achievements.
Oh, I guess I did. I remember getting pop-ups.
Yeah.
About achievements.
Yeah. And then, so I got through the narrative arc. Like, I got 3 stars on the basic story for the first, like, half of the levels, and then I started getting fewer and fewer stars, like 2 stars or 1 star, and, like, I got to the end and was able to beat the end, I think, with 2 stars on just normal. But I could not beat any of the challenge modes on normal beyond level 2. And so then I started going back to those, and I just started beating them on easy, which...
Do you get the extra star even if you beat them on easy?
Yeah.
Huh.
It just, the only difference is
maybe
that
I should just go back and play this thing on easy, play the level that I got stuck on. Yeah. Because I enjoyed playing it. It was just like, well,
easy
there's nothing
easy
I
is
can
great.
Do.
Easy is great. Because it's still challenging. Like, you still can, like, screw up, but it is, the curve is so much less steep.
Is it just, do they just have fewer hit points?
Fewer hit points, I think, maybe a few fewer enemies per thing. And the types of enemies might be slightly less aggressive or whatever. Like, it might, like, less flying enemies or less waves of flying or whatever. But it was a lot of fun. Like, going back through and playing a lot of them on easy was just a lot of fun. And then now I have almost all the stars from the early stuff.
You have liked a lot of tower defense games that I didn't necessarily care for, I think.
Maybe. I don't know.
I thought Lost Earth tower defense was pretty good.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. That was also one of my probably top 4 on iOS.
I really like Bubble Tanks tower defense.
Yeah, I like that one a lot too.
Is that what it was called?
I think it was. Yeah, I think because, like, Bubble Tanks was that weird game where you, like, built these tanks.
Yeah.
And the second game was
The first one you didn't. You just upgraded. The second one you got to control where stuff went, and that was too much control.
Yeah,
there was too much customization.
Yeah. But then the tower defense game was pretty cool.
Yeah.
They had, like, neat upgrade paths and stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wish that I knew what I felt was the real core difference between tower defense games that I like and tower defense games that I don't like.
I mean, maybe it's worth spending some time analyzing
making
them.
A list of features.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like there are just as many fixed path versus you define the path.
Yeah, that's
tower
true.
Defense games.
I really do like sometimes being able to build the maze. I mean, that's one of the things. Lost Earth, it didn't have a lot of that, but, like, it just having almost every variety of tower defense game inside it at some point was just cool, you know. It's weird that this has become a genre of game that just sort of developed out of
a Warcraft mod.
Yeah,
a Warcraft 2 mod.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not as weird as how League of Legends and the Dota stuff, which is like
Lords
bewildering.
Like, it just took over. Apparently, League of Legends took over based on some stat. One of those stat tracker things is now the most played game, like having surpassed World of Warcraft.
What?
Like, the most hours get spent on it.
No.
And I don't know, man. I am so scared of both, that I know that the interface makes no sense because it is the result of some tropes established by it being World of Warcraft or Warcraft 3 maps before, and B, that it's just going to be people yelling at me and telling me that I suck at everything.
League of Legends is the most played per capita
I don't know, man. It might be the most hours played logged by League of Legends client. I don't know. I really don't know.
We sent this computer into the future.
I think I just saw a news story. Maybe it was on Kotaku.
Okay.
It was right next to how Daniel Tosh's rape jokes aren't funny.
Okay.
What are we going to do for the next assignment? It is probably going to be a couple of weeks before we do another show.
I think we had talked about going back and trying Ultima 4.
Yeah. And it was free or very cheap on GOG
recently.
I know that I bought it. I either bought it or I downloaded it.
I think
it
might have been given
free.
It might have been free when you sign up for a GOG account. I think it might have been one of those, like, 5 or 10 games that they give you. It's got kind of a clunky interface.
Is it one of the
party
the top-down ones where you're looking at the head and shoulders of your character, like your Mars one? Is it that engine?
So, yes. Okay. I think it is that same engine, yeah. I loved this game in high school. I think I probably will not love it as much now. I spent a lot of time playing it, and I don't think I'll have enough time to really get into it as much.
Play it with some hacks.
It's because of the virtue system, there's a lot of unfolding possibility, and you don't necessarily know at any given moment what impact your actions are going to have on your virtues. Hmm. So there's a lot going on.
Do you see it after the fact?
I don't think so.
Huh.
I think it is kind of a hidden thing.
It's pretty old school.
It's really, yeah. Mm-hmm. The world's pretty compelling. There's a lot going on, as I remember. But yeah, I think it might not hold up as much as I.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I've never played an Ultima game, so.
Oh wow!
Yeah, okay. This will be.
This was my first one. I don't think I played Ultima 1 through 3.
So. I played 2 and 3.
Yeah,
they were pretty good.
Okay.
Well, all right. So that's our assignment.
Cool.
Kevin, we're both out of time, and I forgot the listener mail sheet at home. But if somebody wanted to send us some listener mail, how would they do so?
Well, they could tweet us at VGHotDog. They could email us, vghotdog@gmail.com. And they could check our forums, which you can get to via a link on videogameshotdog.com. And also, if you wanted to check out our podcast feed on iTunes and give us some stars or a star and some reviews.
Give us those points that we need for those leaderboards.
Yeah, we need to level up.
We need to game that system.
That would be pretty sweet.
Well, I've had a really good time here in San Diego doing this podcast with you guys. I'm going to not go back to Comic-Con.
Sandy Amberg. I need to get back to the convention floor. So have a great weekend, everyone.
Bye-bye.
See ya.